From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzak Rolott, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. This time last week, Americans were just starting to learn about Chechnya after authorities released the identities of the two suspects in the Boston Marathon bombings. Rebecca Cruz and I will talk about the troubled region of Russia.
It's estimated about 100,000 Chechen casualties, many of them civilians. The Russians obviously felt very justified in doing this, but it was seen as a very bloody war, this first Chechen war.
And later, Rebecca Cruz discusses women in combat and the U.S. drone program with NPR's Rachel Martin.
In some ways it was, there's a woman here, how harmful can she be? Let's just let her in. And so I could kind of, you know, sit along a back wall and observe.
She reported from both Iraq and Afghanistan and served as the network's religion correspondent. But first, this hour's news. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzak Rolott. Rebecca, the news, of course, everyone's been paying attention to this week, ever since last Friday, that the alleged Boston bombers are Chechen, have connections to the Russian, southern part of Russia that we know of as Chechnya. So that part of the world had, for some time, been on the front pages, lots of violence and conflict, but is kind of fallen off the headlines for some time, and many of us were surprised about that kind of connection. So let's remember a little bit about what's going on in Chechnya. What is it that we should really remember about what's going on in that region?
Well, and of course, as you said, they do have ethnic Chechen blood. We don't know if there's really a connection between what's occurred in Chechnya and what's occurred in Boston. But it does bring up some issues, particularly from the 1990s. If you'll recall, in 94, there was a very bloody and brutal war, the first Chechen war from 94 to 96. And this was between the Chechens, who had claimed independence, as many others had after the fall of the Soviet Union, and the Russians came in and brutally beat this down. And had a number of casualties. It's estimated about 100,000 Chechen casualties, many of them civilians. The Russians obviously felt very justified in doing this, but it was seen as a very bloody war, this first Chechen war. And then in the late 1990s, 99, we have the second Chechen war. And by this time, Vladimir Putin is in power. And again, we see kind of an uprising. And that war, the operation lasted for about 2 years, ended in 2000, again, very, very bloody. But then we see kind of a guerrilla warfare that comes out of that, that was from about 2000 to about 2009, though we do still see some of that occurring as well. And this is where we start seeing some of the suicide attacks and some of the bombings, you'll remember, Suzette.
Well, throughout the 2000s, we really saw several. So we have an issue here in Chechnya with Muslim separatists, Islamic mm-hmm. separatists, and kind of extreme. It's an Islamic part of Russia. And so they have these rebellion, this mm-hmm. attempt to try to gain independence, right? But then they're also very much connected to terrorist attacks outside their country, right? They was in the 2002, the attack in Moscow at the theater that killed a couple hundred people, mm-hmm. many of whom were the hostages.
Yeah, and in fact, an Oklahoman died in that, not necessarily outside of their country, outside Chechnya.
Sorry, outside of Chechnya, outside of their region.
Right.
In Moscow.
Yeah, and there's a whole movement there. It's not just Chechens, but of course, Dagestan, which is next to Chechnya, and Ingushetia, which is also right next to Chechnya. So many of these have been coordinated attacks. So yes, the attack of the theater, and then of course Beslan. I think we all can
school,
remember
the school shootings where there were 300 children.
Tragic situation there with a very, very vivid images coming.
Metro
out of there.
Bombings in Moscow. So I mean, there's this history then, but recent history. But of course, violence and conflict has happened in Chechnya for centuries, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this goes back like to the 16th century when there's been war after war after war. So it's been a volatile region for some time, I guess. But so the question now, you know, is still to be seen is what kind of connection do these alleged bombers have here in Chechnya and what the impact then of that connection will be. I mean, again, it's questionable if they were just kind of acting mm-hmm. on their own. But these were asylum seekers in the United States. These were young men that young boys that came to the United States fleeing this conflict in Chechnya, and actually, at least in the case of the younger one, achieved citizenship in this country. And so now the impact on the immigration issue is certainly before us, and whether the United States should even accept asylum seekers anymore. I mean, what are we to make of that?
Well, that's a very tricky question, because obviously an area that's having some sort of conflict, we want to accept people in that are fleeing for their lives or being persecuted in some way or another, and we really don't have a way to know. These were people that came over that really didn't live all that long in Chechnya, a couple of months for the younger one, and we really would have had very little indication when they came to the United States that this is what was going to happen, if this is in fact connected.
Well, there is still much we're going to learn about this case, obviously, but it is a reminder of very volatile regions, other parts of the world that can perhaps have an impact on us here. So thank you very much, Rebecca Cruz, as always, for your insight and analysis.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying what you're hearing this half hour, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. Send us a tweet at WorldviewsKGOU or an email to worldviews@ou.edu. Coming up, NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday host, Rachel Martin, joins Rebecca Cruz to discuss women in the military and the U.S. drone program. These conversations and this type of in-depth analysis you hear from me, Rebecca, and Joshua Landis each week wouldn't be possible without the support of our listeners. You count on KGOU and Worldviews to provide serious journalism and meaningful conversations around the clock and from around the world. Here's KGOU General Manager Karen Hulp to tell you how you can show your support. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Last fall, NPR's Rachel Martin moved from the field to the studio as the new host of Weekend Edition Sunday. Before taking over from Audie Cornish, Martin was NPR's national security correspondent. She reported extensively on the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and the effectiveness of the Pentagon's counterinsurgency strategy. She joins Rebecca Cruz from Washington, D.C.
Rachel Martin, thank you so much for joining me today on Worldviews.
Very happy to be here, Rebecca.
Well, I thought we'd start with talking a little bit about your past history of reporting. You started off with religious issues and then moved on to be the national security correspondent for NPR. Was there anything about covering religious issues that prepared you for security issues? Or is there an area where the two intersected, or were they completely different?
That is a very interesting question. I don't know if there are natural parallels. I mean, they're actually very different in a couple of ways. I have often said that covering religion was a fascinating beat because you're talking about the issues that people hold most dear, that are most intimate, that are most important to them in many ways. And I just felt like sometimes all I had to do was brandish a microphone, and all of a sudden I was involved in a very intimate, personal conversation with someone about their values and beliefs. That is the opposite in many ways of covering national security, especially on the intelligence side, when you're often dealing with anonymous sources. You often don't even have a microphone with you because everything has to be done confidentially, because oftentimes people don't go on the record. And of course, they are most of the time not interested in telling their story or in making their views known. So it's a much more arduous process in some ways.
Well, one of the issues that you have reported a great deal on is the changing structure of the U.S. military, the elimination of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the recent decision to allow women into combat areas. Does this reflect a changing culture in your position within the military? And can you envision perhaps a larger change in the military, be it internally or perhaps even externally, in how the military engages internationally?
Well, I don't think it's going to change the way the U.S. military conducts itself. This is, though, a really significant change, one that has been in the offing now for a few years. Obviously, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a huge watershed moment for the U.S. military. U.S. military officials I've spoken with very recently have said that that has happened with relatively little blowback, that has been a relatively smooth transition. What is perhaps more difficult is the decision to officially allow women to take part in combat jobs. This has, of course, been happening around conflict zones already, in war zones, in Afghanistan, in Iraq. Women have been serving in positions where they have come into contact. They have come under fire. They have been in combat situations. The problem was they weren't officially allowed to be there. So the change in policy recognizes the reality on the ground. But the change in policy also will afford women the opportunity to compete for top level spots in very elite military units. We're talking about Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, Delta Force. This is where the tension still exists, because the debate right now is whether or not you lower standards in order to make it possible, physical standards mostly, make it possible for women to secure positions in those elite units. And that's something the military is really still grappling with. Military commanders insist that they're not going to lower standards. It won't affect how the U.S. military conducts itself and its readiness. But culturally, this is a very big change, and it still has yet to be seen how the military is going to roll this out.
So we'll certainly need to continue to keep an eye on that. Another change or something that's been in the news of late is the issue of drones. Can you maybe talk a little bit about this issue and the controversy that seems to be brewing?
Well, the Obama administration has only recently admitted that they've been using this kind of warfare, drone warfare, or the use of unmanned aerial vehicles to launch attacks against insurgents, members of Al-Qaeda and affiliated networks. So really, the issue is often about transparency. And there are numerous questions about civilian casualties. Those numbers are very hard to get, because oftentimes these strikes are happening in remote parts of Pakistan or Yemen, where there are no Western reporters. There are hardly any reporters at all. And verifying civilian deaths is virtually impossible. So the program has been incredibly controversial. At the same time, administration officials will say it has also been incredibly effective in taking out key leaders of Al-Qaeda and affiliated terrorist networks. And so, you know, this is something that we're obviously going to see moving forward. The Obama administration has been far more forward-leaning with the use of this technology than even than the Bush administration before it. So in his second term, it will be interesting to see how the war and Al-Qaeda moves forward, and what is the future of this particular technology as we think about how our allies, but also countries that are not so friendly with the United States, appropriate this technology for their own uses.
Well, and the other thing you mentioned, of course, was the situations with Iraq and Afghanistan. We are drawing out of Afghanistan in the next year and a half. That is the pledge, at least. And you actually had the opportunity to do some reporting from both of those areas. I wondered, as a female and as a Westerner, were there any challenges that you faced as a reporter there?
Well, you know, I've talked a lot about this. I think there are benefits and there are drawbacks. In my reporting experience in Afghanistan is a lot deeper than my experience in Iraq. I was in Baghdad and in Ramadi in Anbar province in Iraq in 2007. But I was mostly traveling as an embedded reporter with the U.S. military. In Afghanistan, when I first started reporting from there in 2003, I was operating on my own as a freelancer and then as a reporter for NPR. And I was not embedded with the U.S. military. I was just kind of operating on my own. And, you know, sometimes my gender forced me out of certain situations, made it more difficult for me to have conversations with Afghan tribal elders. And then, you know, in other situations, it was completely the opposite. It was actually to my benefit. And sometimes it was because I just wasn't seen as a threat. In some ways it was, there's a woman here. How harmful can she be? Let's just let her in. And so I could kind of, you know, sit along a back wall and observe. And so my gender was both a challenge and it provided some opportunities, I think, at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting. What were some of the lessons you think from a national security point of view that we have hopefully learned from our involvement in Iraq and in Afghanistan as we kind of end our involvement there?
Well, that's a very complicated question.
Sure.
I think that on the whole, administration officials I speak with and national security officials agree that there is very little appetite now for a new ground war. We've just endured more than a decade fighting two very complicated, complex, intense ground wars.
Perhaps the reason why we're now supporting drone warfare.
In a way, that is definitely a benefit of the technology, but it's becomes a much more complicated conversation when you're talking about the targets involved in drone warfare and the rules of war. That's probably something we probably shouldn't delve too far into in this conversation. But, you know, I think that the U.S. military officials right now are obviously facing severe budget cuts, and they are trying to think about how to reduce the force, what to do with the tens of thousands of soldiers, Marines, airmen, troops that are coming home from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. At the same time, stay prepared for whatever might happen. Forced to reduce their troops, but at the same time, the U.S. military has to be prepared to meet the threat that's out there. And so that's the challenge right now.
So much interesting information, and unfortunately, we are getting close on time. So I just want to thank you once again for your input, and thank you for agreeing to join us today.
Sure, Rebecca, it was my pleasure.
You've been listening to Rebecca Cruz's conversation with Rachel Martin, the host of NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday. KGOU produces Worldviews alongside the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Brian Hardzinski edits the program and produces our digital content for KGOU.org. And Mackenzie Samus prepared the research for this interview. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Gralat.